A Simple Thing, written by Iridan, read by Marianas. Chapter 13. Hibirar. For a long moment, nothing happened. Din tensed, shoulders pulling tight. He couldn't help himself. He couldn't see. He didn't know what Fett was going to do or when he was going to do it. All Din knew was that it was going to hurt. Fett had, apparently, realized the same thing. Instead of immediately reacting, he held very still. He kept one hand against Din's jaw, stabilizing them both. He kept the clamp where it was. He's enjoying this, Din realized. He pulled his shoulders even tighter. Fett caught him at it and laughed softly. None of that, he said. A wicked note had entered his voice. Remember, you asked for this. Asked for, Din started, needled, but Fett didn't let him finish. He released the tension on the clamp, letting it close all the way over Din's nipple. For a fraction of a second, Din didn't feel anything but pressure. But then Fett tugged, just a little bit, and pain lit up behind Din's eyelids. He choked on a shout and tried to wrench away, surprised by the depth of the pain. But Fett's gentle hand on Din's face turned into a firm grip. Fett's hands were huge and strong. Din didn't get very far before Fett pulled him, none too gently now, back into position. None, Fett repeated, low, of that. Din stilled instinctively. His eyes were open, but he couldn't see anything past the blindfold. His breath caught in his throat. This is such a little thing, Fett said, tugging at the clamp lightly again. Din had to suck in another breath, determined not to cry out. The pain was sharp and intimate. It writhed in Din's gut. You can take it, can't you? Din bared his teeth in Fett's direction, half outraged and half overwhelmed. His body shouted at him to fight back. This wasn't something Din had ever experienced. Even getting flogged hadn't felt like this. You can take it, Fett repeated, and Din decided that he would take it, just to prove to Fett that he could. He tilted his chin up, defiant. Fett's grip on his face didn't loosen, but he did stroke a thumb behind Din's ear, affectionate. The sensation was such a sharp contrast to the pain in his chest that Din wavered, unsure again. That's it, Fett encouraged. He tugged again, harder. Din had to reach out and fumble for the edge of the table, gripping it so tightly the edges dug into his fingers. He stared sightlessly straight ahead, struggling to remember what to do, how to handle this. Here, said Fett, tone sweet with false pity. Take a second. Learn how it feels. Din was smart enough to hear the trap in Fett's voice. He was also smart enough to realize that there was nothing he could do about it. Fett was in charge here and Din was at his mercy. That, oddly, helped Din settle some. Fett was going to do whatever he was going to do. Din couldn't see it coming or defend against it. What was going to happen was going to happen. All Din could do was take it. Fett patted Din's cheek gently, then let him go. He stepped away. Din ignored the loss of contact and focused on trying to adjust to the pain still spiking through his chest. It sort of felt like getting shot. A burn, a single point of pain instead of the solid, bone-deep ache Fett had worked into Din's back with the flogger. But it's just pain, Din told himself. He breathed through his nose, keeping his hands tight on the edge of the table. Without Fett there to pull and tug at the clamp, the pain evened out. Din wasn't sure he'd ever been so aware of his nipple before. Usually he was so wrapped up in his armor that he didn't have to worry about any sensitivity or thin skin there, beyond making sure his armor fit right and didn't chafe. And he wasn't sure he liked it, either. His fingers twitched. He wanted to tug the blindfold off and see. If he could see it, Din knew he'd be able to talk himself down from this fear. He could rationalize the pain. Just like it had before, losing his eyesight made the rest of Din's senses work harder. His awareness of the room expanded, bolstered by his hearing, which picked up Fat as he padded across the floor and returned to Din's side. Din could feel the heat of him, strong and alive. He tried not to sway toward Fat too obviously. Fat was going to hurt Din, after all. Din didn't want to look too eager. "Better?" Fat asked. Din nodded. He had promised to be honest. "The thing about clamps," Fat said, shifting closer. He ran something cold. Another clamp, Din realized with mingled anticipation and fear. Down Din's side, skirting one of Din's thicker blaster scars. "Is that they're easy to underestimate. A little thing can't hurt that badly, right?" "Somehow," Din said, through gritted teeth, "I feel like it can." "Size isn't everything," Fat agreed. "How does it feel?" "It hurts," Din said, emphatically, and Fat seized the opportunity to fix the second clamp to Din's other nipple, mirroring the first. This time, there was no build-up, no anticipation, and somehow, that was worse. Din didn't even have a second to adjust, to let the pain peak and settle. Fat just fixed the clamp to him and let it go. "Kark," Din swore, trying to twist his torso away without letting go of the table. This time, Fat let him, though he did hook a foot around the bottom edge of Din's stool to keep Din from toppling over. "Not keen on these?" Fat asked. Din breathed through his nose again, struggling to find that even peak of pain, and said, as steadily as he could manage, "Not really, no." "A shame," said Fat. He traced the outside of Din's nipple with a thumbnail. Din twitched, hissing. Even that touch, light as it was, sparked pain. The clamps felt so tight that Din was surprised he wasn't bleeding. He could feel the teeth digging into his skin. "You look good like this, Meshla." The edges of Mandoa cut in deeper than the clamps. Din flushed all the way down to his belly. He didn't know the word, but he understood the tone. "Pretty." Fat chuckled. "You don't know what you look like," he continued. "I'm sure you'll tell me," Din grumbled. Fat flicked one of the clamps, which shut Din up. The pain jolted through him like Din had touched a live coupling. He felt it flash all the way down to the base of his spine. "I think we've talked about manners, Jarika," said Fat, deceptively mild. Din couldn't help but tounce again. "Sorry," he muttered. Fat flicked him again, but this time he did it very gently on Din's nose. Din startled. He hadn't felt Fat moving near his face. "Another word for you," Fat said. "Misheb, you know it?" Din knew Shibushin, which wasn't particularly flattering. He rolled his eyes, grateful that Fat couldn't see it. Fat would probably flick one of the clamps again, and that had hurt. "No," he said, honestly. Fat hummed. "Means you've got a smart mouth," he said. "That ever get you into trouble?" Din shrugged. Fat snorted and ruffled Din's hair, the fondness once again at odds with the pain jolting through Din's body, then took his hand away. "Don't worry," Fat assured Din. And his tone had taken on that lightness again, cut by something deeper and darker. "I have a trick for that." When Fat touched Din again, it was with a third clamp, cold and hard, dragging down Din's flank. Din twitched, but held still. Dread began to mount inside his chest. He didn't know if Fat would be able to find a place as sensitive as Din's nipples, not with the rules they'd put in place for the night anyway. But Din knew by now that Fat would certainly try. "Easy," Fat murmured. Din tilted his head back. "I'm fine," he said, as strongly as he could manage. He wasn't sure who he was trying to convince. Fat chuckled. "Hold still, then," he ordered, and Din obeyed. Well, he tried. As soon as Fat closed the third clamp, this one on a spot of soft skin between two of Din's ribs on his left side, twisting a little to make sure the grip was good, Din yelped and bucked, feet coming down on the floor to lever Din up and away from the bolt of hot agony that lanced through him. Fett caught Din by the hip and slammed him back down so hard that the stool creaked. The speed and strength he'd used stunned Din. He collapsed back into his seat, shocked. "Stay," Fett growled, gentleness gone. Din stared at him blindly. His breath came short and fast. His head spun. His pain had been momentarily forgotten. "I haven't been thrown around like that since the Dark Trooper," he thought, dazed. Suddenly, whether or not Din could take the third clamp mattered less. Fett could make Din take it. He could make Din take as many clamps, as much pain as he wanted. That should have frightened Din. He'd been taught all his life to avoid letting someone else get the upper hand like this. It was too dangerous for a Mandalorian to end up in a position like this. An enemy would press their advantage too far, strip off a vulnerable warrior's armor, expose their face. Fett could do anything he wanted to Din right now, and while Din knew, in the back of his head, that if he needed to fight Fett off, that he could at least try, the knowledge felt very far away. "But I'm not afraid." He was, admittedly, a little bit afraid of what else Fett could come up with, the creative ways he could make Din hurt, but he wasn't afraid of Fett abusing Din's trust. As strange as it was, given the situation, Din was safe. Din was already Darmanda. Fett couldn't take Din's armor or his creed. He could hurt Din, and the threat of pain, the promise of pain, echoed in his chest like another heartbeat, fast and even. But Fett could only inflict pain on Din's body, and by now Din knew Fett a bit better. Fett wasn't going to hurt Din more than Din could bear. "There you are," said Fett, tone gentling. "You get it now, yeah?" Din nodded dumbly, robbed of words. Fett's hand still pressed down into his hip, tight enough to bruise. "You're not going to try to go anywhere." Din shook his head. "Jate," Fett said. Din shivered. "Don't move," Fett told him. "You're going to take a few more, all right? And then we'll take them off. Nod if you understand." Din nodded and was rewarded with another flick, this one to the newest clamp on his side. The skin was sensitive. The motion jarred it, tugging at the skin, making pain pulse hotly underneath the clamp. But if Din breathed through it, concentrated all of his efforts on enduring it, on keeping still, then he could manage it. "Garatine," Fett muttered. He roamed over Din's chest and belly, searching for another spot. He found one just above Din's right hip. When he attached the fourth clamp, Din shuddered all over, twitching like a bantha trying to escape a stinging fly. But he didn't bolt or buck. Din licked his lips. "I don't know what that means," he said. His own voice had roughened with the effort of choking back a shout. "It means that you're stubborn," said Fett. Din's forehead creased. He knew that. "Mandoa doesn't translate the best into basic," Fett elaborated, sensing Din's confusion. "Atin means stubborn in a way that can save your life. Enduring, tenacious. From Atinir, to endure." He added a fifth and a sixth clamp across Din's belly, one after the other. Fett's tone darkened even more. "To take it." "Atinir," Din repeated, the pitch of the word rising higher when Fett added a seventh clamp next to the sixth, so that the last three made a line across Din's stomach. "Good," said Fett. "Only a few more." More, Din thought, despairing. The pain had transformed. He felt it in every inhale, in every heartbeat. His pulse throbbed underneath each clamp. A fine layer of sweat had broken out across his body. But Fett's hand was still at Din's hip, strong as Beskar. "He can make me take it," Din reminded himself. He sat up straighter. He didn't need Fett to make him. Din could endure it. He would. Fett added three more clamps, two to his right side, one to his left, to even him out. Each individual spot felt like being stabbed a little or being bitten, but pain had spread between the clamps too, following a network of nerves Din hadn't even known existed. A network of nerves Fett had strung together just for Din, just to teach him this. When he was finished, Fett took his hands away. Din heard him lean back, resting his weight against the work table. Din turned towards him, mouth open. Pain made his head swim. "Meshla," Fett repeated, softly. Din didn't have the energy to flush again. All his effort was turned towards keeping himself still, keeping his hands away from the clamps. "Very good," Fett said. He seemed to know what praise did to Din. He even seemed to like it. Din couldn't see his face, but he could hear Fett's pleased little hum when Din turned, helpless, and tilted his head towards where Din thought Fett's face had to be. "Now," said Fett, "comes the fun part. You can move as much as you want for this, Jerrica." "What?" Din wondered, confused. Then Fett's fingers found one of the clamps situated across Din's belly, and, fast as a sand viper, he released the tension and plucked the clamp off. This time, Din did shout. He couldn't stop himself. He'd thought that he'd understood the pain, had gotten used to it, but he hadn't understood anything. As soon as that tension was released, all of the nerves that had been pinched together underneath it flared, a pain that was so hot and overwhelming and sudden that tears pricked in Din's eyes. 9 left, said Fett, and plucked off 3 more clamps, one after the other. Din bared his teeth and took it, though he couldn't stop the blindfold from growing damp. Fire spread across his stomach, up his sides. By the time Fett reached Din's nipples, it was all Din could do not to jump backwards and run. Fett didn't relent. He plucked the clamps on Din's nipples off last, one after the other, and Din nearly howled. Agony was too light a word for the hurt that crashed through him. The pain was bone deep, was lodged in Din's lungs and in the space behind his eyes. Tears leaked out from underneath the blindfold. Din could feel them drying on his cheeks. "Udesi, Udesi," Fett said, pressing a big hand flat against Din's belly, reeling Din back in. "It's all right. You're done. You did well." The noise was mostly nonsense. All Din could hear was a dull roar, like a ship's engine trying to compensate as it switched from hyperspace to sublight. But Fett's hand was hot, hotter even than the pain singing through his nerves, and it was grounding. Din forced himself to breathe. Pain was in the mind, and Din was Baroya. He had control of his mind. Eventually, Din managed to calm himself down. The pain didn't fade exactly, but it blunted out. It shifted from feeling like burns or stabs to feeling like small but very deep bruises, like an impact. Din could handle that. "Udesi," Fett murmured again. Din tilted his face towards him, shoulders starting to shake like the come down from an adrenaline rush. Fett understood and shifted so that he was directly in front of Din, and he pulled Din, still blindfolded, into his chest. Din immediately pushed against him, relieved. Fett settled a hand into Din's hair, the other hand coming up to undo the blindfold. He pulled it away, but Din didn't bother to open his eyes. Red and black lights were still swimming behind them. "You did well," Fett rumbled. "Most I've tried that with have needed to be tied up during." Din grunted against Fett's chest. He thought of the Wishok silk restraints in Fett's crate and shivered. "That," he thought, fuzzy and blurred around the edges, "is a conversation to have another time." Fett made a disgruntled sound. Din blearily looked up, opening his eyes. The room was dim enough that the light didn't sear him immediately. "What?" Din managed. Fett laid a hand on Din's forehead, a frown creasing his face. "You're that cold?" he asked. Even through the haze wrapped around Din's mind like a blanket, Din could pick up Fett's concern. Din scowled and leaned away. He didn't need to be coddled like a sick child. He just liked the way Fett felt, was all. Liked how warm and solid he was, how safe, Din thought, and decided not to be ashamed for thinking it. "I'm fine," Din said thickly. Jaren, we've talked about this, said Fett, scowling too. What's wrong? What do you need? I don't need anything, Din muttered. Fett reached out again and Din pulled away. He felt the stool sway underneath him, but managed to keep his seat, though Din had to reach out and grab the table to hold himself steady. Fett snorted. Fine, he said. What do you want, then? Din's scowl deepened. What did it matter what he wanted? Hey, said Fett. He reached out again, and this time he caught Din before Din could pull away, wrapping a hand loosely around Din's wrist. Hey, Fett repeated. Easy. He slotted his fingers over Din's pulse. They both could feel it, hammering. You're allowed to want things, Jerrica, Fett said quietly. All you have to do is ask for them. Din stared at him, trying to work up the energy to be incredulous, but he knew it wasn't worth it. Fett was implacable, and Din was tired. Din forced himself to relax, pushing the tension in his hands out, uncurling them, turning the palm of his hand up in Fett's grip. Fett rewarded him by stroking a thumb against the soft skin of Din's wrist. The touch was very gentle and very kind, soothing without leaving Din feeling coddled. I just wanted to touch you, Din said, wincing at how needy that sounded, how childish. It was nice. That's all. That's all? Fett repeated, exasperated fondness creeping into his tone. Din tried to resist the urge to scowl at him again and failed. That's easily fixed, then. Easily given. Come here. Din resisted a little, but Fett really was inexorable. He just kept tugging on Din gently, a light pressure that was easy to resist, but persistent, until Din gave up and folded himself back against Fett's side. Fett kept one hand on Din's wrist, absently stroking the thin skin where Din's pulse still fluttered, and looped the other over Din's shoulders. He let Din press his cheek against the curve of Fett's shoulder. Din sighed. He couldn't help it. It felt good to sit like this, side by side, touching all the way down Din's body. Fett's scent, familiar now, surrounded him. Sherry, Fett murmured again, tone going light, teasing. Don't ruin it, Din grumbled. Fett chuckled. Wouldn't dare, he said. Din wasn't able to sink all the way down into that hazy, drifting space again, but he didn't mind. This was good, too. He liked that he was aware of the nonsense Fett was murmuring, liked that he was present to feel Fett's fingertips smoothing a gentle pattern over his arm. They stayed like that for a while, until Din's heartbeat settled and his breath evened out. Finally, he made himself sit up, cleared his throat, and shook his head a little, chasing the pleasant haze away. Better? Fett asked, letting Din go. Fett stretched, rolling his shoulders. The muscles in his chest and back shifted underneath his shirt. Din colored and looked away. I'm too tired for this, he told himself sternly. Better, Din allowed. He knew by now that Fett was like a missif on a scent if he didn't get an answer he liked. Good, said Fett, pleased. He looked Din up and down, eyes bright. Probably looking at the marks he left, Din thought, though he couldn't really blame Fett since Din knew he'd be studying himself in the mirror in the morning. Need help getting back to your room? Fett asked. Din shook his head. I think I'll manage, he said, aiming for dry. Fett nodded. Let's get your things, then. He helped Din find his shirt, which Din sleepily tugged on, and guided Din to the lift, though he let Din climb into it on his own. See you in the morning, said Fett quietly, the doors closing over his face. See you, Din returned, just as quiet, and let the lift bring him back to his own room. Din dreamed. He knew that he did, because he woke up with the first rays of sunlight, disoriented and confused, words dying in the back of his throat, but by the time he'd blinked the sleep out of his eyes, the dream was gone. Frowning, Din flopped back against his bed and threw a hand over his eyes to block the sunlight. What was that? He wondered. Din had never been the type to dream much. He was usually either so tired he slept too deeply for the dreams to reach, or so tense he didn't sleep deeply enough. He'd had nightmares as a child, all of the foundlings had. They hadn't been foundlings by happy accident, after all. Most of the kids Din had come up with had had the same story. A planet devastated by the Clone Wars, grief and terror and worlds dying, families snatched away, last-minute rescue from above. Those had, more or less, faded away with time. By the time Din had been a teenager, he'd been too busy to have nightmares. Every waking moment was spent training, learning, sparring. He'd collapsed into his cot at the end of every day and slept like a dead man. That was when Din had discovered that nightmares, while they couldn't be outrun, could be outworked. Anytime he'd started to have bad dreams again as an adult, Din had remedied them quickly enough by taking on any and every job he could find. "It's not like I'm not working, though," Din thought, running his tongue over his teeth. He wasn't sure that the dreams he'd been having lately were nightmares, though. This one had been sad, he thought. He could still feel the lingering edges of grief in the corners of his mind, but the specifics were gone. I wonder if Fett has trouble sleeping, too. Fett certainly seemed to avoid sleeping. He was up at all hours, just like Din was, working long into the night, and he'd come down for morning court not long after Din himself would. Maybe he sleeps during the day? There were always a few hours between midday and afternoon court where Fett would disappear. Maybe he was sneaking back up to his rooms to nap. The thought made Din smile a little, affection a warm shadow beneath his ribs. Whatever I'm dreaming about can't be that important, he told himself bracingly, rolling over so he could get his feet underneath him. I'd remember if it was, right? Din stretched, yawning, and stumbled into the fresh air. He made sure to take care of the necessities, a quick sonic, water work through his hair, a trim down either side of his jaw, before he let himself admire his new bruises. His chest was still mottled green and yellow where Ashek had struck him. Fett himself hadn't left many marks at all. Din found a few crescents where Fett's fingernails had dug into his side, a set of fingerprint bruises just above Din's hip, but that was it. There was a line of three faint red marks across his belly, a few more on his flanks. But there weren't any bruises left by the clamps. Din carefully brushed a finger over his right nipple and hissed. It was sore, tender, maybe even a little swollen, but it hadn't bruised. Din was surprised. He'd felt like those clamps were tearing into him, but the worst they'd done was leave some redness. Strange. He was learning more and more every time he and Fett had one of their meetings. He wouldn't have thought that something as small as a plasticine clamp, something Din had used to hang up drying clothes or fix a sheet up to give himself some privacy, could hurt like it had. He rubbed the sore spot gently, careful not to prod at the tenderness too hard. Faint pain and even fainter pleasure flickered. Din took his hand away. Not now, he told himself. It was easy enough to push aside any lingering arousal and focus on getting ready for the day. Din got dressed, it really was nice to have more than one set of underclothes, and tugged his armor back on in parts and pieces, checking the fit. His diligence in the desert had paid off. Everything was in good order. Din ran a diagnostic once he pulled his helmet on and it came back clear. His armor was still sound. Pleased, Din strapped on his weapons and tugged on his cloak. He hadn't had time yet to unpack his kit, but he'd find time later. Din made it downstairs in time to snag the last cup of Tusken Mayam tea from behind the bar. He preferred it to Kaff. Kaff had never really worked on Din. For most beings, it woke them up, helped them focus, but for Din, it had always made him anxious. He'd drink it if he had to. He couldn't go for days without sleep, like he'd been able to as a young man, but he preferred the tea. "Morning, Jaren," Nora said, smiling at him. Despite the hour, she was bright-eyed, her leku twitching. "Good to have you back. We missed you while you were away." "Don't listen to her," Fennec warned from the other side of the bar. "She's just trying to grease you up." Din blinked, nonplussed, and tugged his helmet off so he could drink. "Why are you trying to grease me up?" he asked warily, after he'd drained half the cup. Nora beamed at him. The tips of her leku twitched again, almost invitingly. The hairs on the back of Din's neck stood up, his eyes narrowed. She did want something. He looked to Fennec for help. Fennec caught his eye and snorted. "Leave him alone, Nora," she said. "He's just got back." Oh, but he'd be perfect, Nora protested, a pout forming on her face. Din looked between the two of them, feeling increasingly cornered. Perfect for what? I'm glad you asked, said Nora. She tossed one Leku over her shoulder. See, there's this fellow down in the city who's been giving Gita some trouble, and we've had Theron and Zero go take a look, but they can never find the Skullsucker, so I thought that maybe you... Din held up a hand. He finished his tea. Slower, he said, setting the cup back down. Somebody's been bothering Gita? Gita was one of the other Twi'lek who worked behind the bar. She was young and pretty. Most of the palace's visitors liked Gita. Din didn't know her very well, but he'd seen her around often enough over the last few weeks. She'd only started with the outfit recently, while Din had been away on Yavin 4. She lived in Mos Eisley. Din frowned. Have you told Fett? I wanted to, Nora said, her mouth pulled down. But Gita asked me not to. She's too proud. She thinks, well, she was around for Jabba's days a little bit. Back then, asking for help on one of Jabba's bad days was a one-way trip down to see Patissa. Din blinked. Patissa? The Rancor, Fennec said out of the corner of her mouth. The Rancor? But doesn't Patissa mean... Din caught sight of Nora's face and stopped himself. He cleared his throat. Right, he said. Fett wouldn't mind, though, would he? He sent Kasik after Gita when her mother came by, didn't he? If Din was remembering things right, Gita's mother had come to Fett to ask for his help after Gita'd been kidnapped. Kasik had found the girl, brought her back, and Fett had offered her a job so Gita didn't have to keep working in Mos Eisley. No, he wouldn't mind, said Nora and Fennec together. Nora shifted, clearly uncomfortable. But Gita, she asked me not to tell him, so I promised her I wouldn't. She keeps insisting she can handle it on her own, but... What exactly is happening? Din asked, leaning forward. She lives in the Gleaning? She still lives in the Quarter, Nora said. That's where all of her people are. Her mother, her cousins. They were all slaves under Jabba. Under Bib Fortuna, too, I think. I keep telling Gita to move out. She can afford to live in a good neighborhood now, but she wants to be close to her mother. And someone is following her. Nora nodded. Not every day, she said. A couple of times a week, maybe? Just following, Din asked, his concern mounting. Nora nodded. She actually see anyone? Does she know a species, a description? Is it the same person who took her the first time? No, Nora said. She was sobering now that she realized that Din was taking her seriously. Her Leku twitched again, this time in concern. Gita thinks humanoid for sure. She told me she's seen whoever it is out of the corner of her eye a few times, but she's never seen them head on. They walk on two legs, whoever they are. Human size, too. Tall, she said. It can't be the piece of Krayt Kung who took her from her mother. Kasik killed him. Din mulled that over, thinking hard. Why would someone be following her? He asked. Nora shrugged, expression helpless. She won't say, she said. I've been looking into that, Fennec put in, finishing her glass of blue milk. She was around during the Worm's Day, but she wasn't part of Jabba's outfit. She was a dancer, and a younger one at that. One of Bib Fortuna's purchases. He was in charge of providing the entertainment. Gita never got close enough to the big players to learn anything incriminating. Whoever is following her around, I doubt they're after information or leverage. She was a slave, Din thought, understanding. He looked at Nora. You were around in Jabba's day, too, weren't you? Did you and Gita know each other? Manera, you know how many dancers a week came through here? Nora asked. Her tone was light, but her voice very sad. Gita could have been in the room right next to mine, and I wouldn't have known it. We were all out for ourselves, all trying to survive. That was fair. Jabba's court had been as wild as the Great Dune Sea, and just as full of bloodthirsty creatures. Din had preferred the open desert, honestly. A crate dragon would eat you, but it wouldn't try to play at being a friend first. No one in Jabba's court had had any honor. That can't be true, Din told himself, wincing. Guilt prickled beneath his armor. Fett had been at Jabba's court. Fennec, too. And Nora. All three of them had their honor. Is Gita here today? Din asked. Nora shook her head. No, she's in tomorrow night, though. Want to talk to her? Din nodded. It was the least he could do. I can take her home tomorrow night, too, or follow behind if she wants to try to catch whoever's stalking her in the act. Nora sagged in relief. Thank you, she said, all seriousness, her ever-present edge of flirtation gone. Gita's, well, she's young. A bright, happy creature, usually. I didn't know her back in the old day, but I know her now. I hate seeing her afraid. Din just nodded. He could help, one way or the other. But you can't tell the boss, Nora warned. That made Din balk. I don't make a habit of lying to my employers, he said flatly. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Fennec's expression shift. You don't have to lie, Nora said, flapping a hand. Her leku twitched in agitation. I wouldn't lie to him either. Not worth it, you know, but just don't tell him unless he asks outright. Why? Din asked, frowning. Fett would be able to help. He could assign guards to make sure Gita got home safely. He had the muscle lying around now. He'd want to help. Fett cared about his people. He had a certain way of showing it, but Din knew that he cared. Gita made me promise. Din looked between Fennec and Nora. He raised his eyebrows at Fennec, silently asking her if she was all right with this. She was closer to Fett, after all. Din was pretty well entrenched into the outfit by now, but Fennec was Fett's right hand. I've already agreed, said Fennec, shrugging a little. Gita knows that if this situation gets any worse, I'll escalate and tell the boss myself. Everybody's entitled to their secrets up to a point. Din pinched the bridge of his nose, but nodded. Fine, he said. If Fennec was on board, he didn't see why he couldn't keep Gita's confidence either. He looked at Fennec. Up to a point, then. If there was real trouble, like Hutt Kartell sniffing around instead of a jilted lover, Din would tell Fett. Fennec nodded almost imperceptibly. She understood. Tell Gita that I'll help, Din said. Absolutely, Nora said, relief breaking out across her face. I'll tell her. Will you be here tomorrow? It was always hard to say for sure. Fett sent Din out on any number of jobs after all, but Din nodded anyway. He probably had enough favor with Fett that Din could ask to stick around for a few days. Tell her to find me before she goes home after work, he said. I'll be around. Nora nodded. Be careful, Fennec warned, as Nora turned around and went about the business of opening things up for the morning. Din tilted his head. It was easier to look Fennec in the eye than Fett. Din wasn't sure why, but it was. Fennec's gaze was steadier than Fett's. Her eyes didn't cut Din quite as deeply. You're worried, too, he said. Fennec grimaced, which told Din that he was right. If it was something easy, like an old lover or an overzealous admirer, Theron and Zero would have found out by now, she said. They're not as sharp as you, but neither of them are stupid, either. If it's just been a Slimo who can't take no for an answer, the boys would have found them. But since they can't find them... You're thinking a professional? Huts? Or another outfit looking for weaknesses. Valerians, maybe. We warned the Huts off pretty good. If they come back, they'll come here, at Boba and me. They won't waste time scaring a dancing girl. The mention of Valerian. Lady Valerian, who ran a cartel of her own in Mos Entha, made Din wince. He'd forgotten to ask Fett about the whispers of Mandalorians he'd heard from Ashek. He looked sideways at Fennec, who was watching his face with open interest. Din tried not to shy away. It was strange to think about Fennec reading him, about learning the way his mouth moved or how often Din looked up at the ceiling when he was trying to piece together a puzzle. What's that look? Fennec asked. You know Valerian? I know of her, Din said reluctantly. But it's not her, it's... I heard something out in the desert. Most of us do. Din shot her a confused look. Fennec just shrugged. Not a mirage or anything, Din said. I heard from Ashek that there might be Mandalorians on Tatooine, in Mos Entha. That wiped the amused expression off Fennec's face. Mandalorians, are you sure? I haven't followed up on it yet, so no. Din ran a hand through his hair. I haven't had the time. I wanted to check on Mos Pelgo first, and then I wanted to come here. Didn't want to kick the Kyrix nest and go to Mos Entha without telling somebody first. Have you heard anything? About Mandalorians? No. Well, not Mandalorians on planet, she clarified. The remnants know that some Mandalorians took a light cruiser. They don't know who, but they know it was warriors in Beskar armor. It's all over their frequencies. You have access to Imperial frequencies? Fennec shrugged. I did some work for the Empire, she said. You'd be surprised how often they forget to change their codes. Didn't suppose that was fair. The Empire had always been slow to change. That's the only chatter on Mandalorians that I've heard, though, Fennec continued. If there's some on Tatooine, I haven't heard about it. I haven't either, Din said. A few months ago, I heard about Cobb Vanth, but he was the only one who came up when I was casing the planet. Coverts move around, though. Just because they weren't here a few months ago doesn't mean there aren't any now. Tatooine is a good place for a covert, Din didn't add. He chewed on the inside of his cheek. The more he thought about it, the more convinced he was. Din knew that the desert played tricks on the eyes and the ears, but he'd seen Beskar flashing twice now. Ashak had heard of Mandalorians. You tell Boba? Din shook his head. Not yet, he said. He tried not to feel sheepish. I haven't had the time. He'll want to know, Fennec warned. Boba and Mandalorians don't mix. Not even your kind of Mandalorians. He gets along just fine with me, Din muttered. But he had seen what passed between Fad and Kreese as polite conversation. Fennec had a point. Everyone gets along with you, Jaren, said Fennec, amused. You're the exception, not the rule. Boba hasn't told me what happened between him and the others, but he's had enough of you bucketheads. Present company excluded, of course. Din snorted. Why does Kreese hate Fett? Din wondered. It couldn't be that Fett didn't have any honor. Din hadn't known him very long, but so far Fett had kept his word. Fett was fair, a skilled fighter, generous even. He was honorable. An allure in everything but a tribe following him. He said that his father fought in Mandalore civil wars, Din thought to himself. He'd never heard of a civil war on Mandalore, but then he'd never been there, not when it was Mandalore instead of a floating hunk of dust. Kreese called me a child of the Watch. Her people are called Night Owls. Are there different factions? That would explain a few things, if Din thought about it. Kreese was older than Din, older than Fett, too, and had lived on Mandalore for a long time. Maybe she'd known Fett's father. Maybe she'd fought against him. If they'd been on opposite sides of a civil war, that would explain their hatred of each other. What side was I on, I wonder? And what side are these other Mandalorians on? If Fett wasn't well-liked among other Mandalorians because of a war his father had fought, where did that leave Din? Din hadn't fought in any civil war. He hadn't defended Mandalore. He hadn't even known that there was more to Mandalore until a few months ago. And I'm with Fett. Din pulled his helmet back on. I'll talk to him, he told Fennec, troubled now. Probably a good idea. The last thing we need is for Valerian to get wind of them and hire them. She's exactly the type to try to encourage a little cultural fratricide. Din grunted. Sounds like it's going to be a long day then, he muttered. Fennec clapped him on the shoulder and picked up her own helmet. Welcome to the outfit, she said. They nodded to each other, then went about their separate ways. Din had a lot to think about while the business of the day got underway. The throne room was beginning to fill up again. Fennec went to the throne and Din to his usual place by the stairs. Fett joined them at some point. He slipped in, surprisingly unobtrusive for a man in green Beskar, waved to Din, and took himself up to the throne, where he and Fennec had their usual morning briefing in hushed whispers. Din kept turning over the problems in his head while Fett got on with court. Most of Din's attention was on the throne room, of course. He was hardly about to get sloppy now, but a bit of it was turning over Geeta's problem, and his own. Geeta's, at least, would be fairly straightforward. Din would either lend Geeta his protection until whoever was bothering her gave up, or he'd follow along, find out what was happening, and take care of the problem. Stalking a young Twi'lek is one thing, Din thought darkly. Dealing with me is another thing entirely. If whoever was following Geeta was just an old lover or a sad creep, they'd likely take one look at Din and run. And if Geeta was being tailed by the Hutts or by Valerian's people, by slavers or worse, well, Din could deal with that too. It might even be fun. The problem of the Mandalorians was a trickier one. Din was Darmanda. Even if these Mandalorians were a covert, were children of the Watch like Din, once they knew what he was, they wouldn't accept him. They wouldn't work with him either. They might even go to Lady Valerian herself and offer their services on the condition that once they'd killed Fett and Din, they'd keep the Beskar. And if they already don't like Fett. Din didn't have any honor anymore, technically, but the idea of betraying Fett in favor of the Covert and Mos Entha left a bad taste in his mouth. If the Covert didn't like Fett, they would expect Din to side with them. That's what the Covert was for. It was community without questions, protection without expectation. Fett would be their enemy. Din was one of them, nominally. Despite how he felt, there wasn't a great big mark on his armor that declared him Darmanda. Unless he told the Covert's allure or took his helmet off in front of them, the Mandalorians would accept Din as one of their own. If Din was one of their own, Fett would be his enemy too. And if he was Fett's ally, the Covert would be his enemy. Din screwed his eyes shut, tired. The peace he'd found last night was already fading, burning up like dew in the suns. This, Din thought, disgruntled, has gotten complicated. Morning court went off without any trouble, though, which was a relief. Fett handled every problem easily and only had to shoot one petitioner, a Toydarian who'd apparently not heard that Fett wouldn't freight with slavers. Fett was even quiet about it. Jabba had liked to make a spectacle of his kills, but Fett just shot the Toydarian between the eyes, neatly, and moved on to the next petitioner. A hard lesson, especially for the Toydarian, but an effective one. Din kept an eye on everything, just in case he was needed, but by midday, Fett had closed the morning court and gone off with a pair of dour-faced moisture farmers to redraw some property lines, leaving Din at loose ends. Din tried to stick around the throne room for a while to wait and see if Fett would come back, but before long the noise was too much. He'd practically muted his auditory sensors, but he could still feel the noise of the crowd rattling against his armor. Din caught Fennec's eye across the throne room. She didn't have any Tusken shine, but she seemed to get the message when Din pointed at himself and jerked his chin in the direction of the turbo lift. She waved him off anyway, which Din counted as message received. As soon as the doors of the lift closed, Din felt better. The wall of noise cut out all at once, and with his sensors muted, the only sounds Din could hear were the distant thump and rattle of the lift and the faint ringing in his own ears. He didn't know where he was going, exactly, or what he planned to do. He just wanted to be out of the noise for a while, as if some peace and quiet would help him figure out a solution to his problems. He took the lift as high as it would go, crossed the long, sunny hallway, and made his way back up into his own room. Sitting around isn't going to help anything, he told himself. He shed his helmet again and tugged off his gloves, wanting to escape the heat prickling underneath his chin as much as he wanted to get out of the noise. He busied himself emptying out his kit. His weapons were already clean, but he took the time to unpack, to shuffle things around and arrange them in some kind of order. I'm going to need some furniture, he thought, a little rueful. A few blaster racks, at least, and it would be nice to have a proper place to rest his armor. Once he had all of his weapons laid out and arranged neatly, Din overturned his bag, intending to shake out any sand that might have worked its way into the seams, and remembered at the last second that he still had the Jedi holocron packed up with everything. It tumbled out of his kit, and Din swore, scrambling to catch it. He snatched it up just before it hit the floor. That could have been bad. He brought the holocron up to inspect it. There weren't any new cracks, thankfully. The sunlight slanting in through the long window caught the holocron's edges, made light refract off its many faces. Din cocked his head, curious. That's interesting. He shuffled closer to the window and brought the holocron directly into the light. There's something in there. Din hadn't seen it before. He'd either been in the low light of Fett's rooms or the dark of the desert. But if he held the holocron up to the light, tilted it just so, it almost looked like there was another, smaller light inside of it. A power source? Din rotated the holocron in his hand, trying to figure out the best angle that would let him see what was in the middle of it. The light caught and shone and refracted. The glass was warm against Din's hand. He peered closer, eyebrows drawing together. Is it vibrating? Din could certainly feel something. He felt it in his fingers and, oddly, his ears. It was a hum or a whine, lower in pitch than the droning noise he was used to. It reminded him of a heartbeat, almost, or the internal gears and wires of a droid ticking away underneath a chassis. The light inside of the holocron flickered, drawing Din's eye again. With the object held up in the sun, Din had an even better look at the fissures and seams holding the whole thing together. It does open, he realized, following a seam. The bronzium inlay on the corners made separate shapes. Four-sided pyramids, Din realized. And there were seams all around it, like the pyramids were supposed to be twisted or turned. Am I supposed to do all four at once? Din could manage two, but the holocron was just big enough that he couldn't get more than that. Maybe that's why Jedi use them. They turn two pyramids with their hands and two with the Force. Still, Din thought, an odd sort of excitement beginning to build underneath his skin. Can't hurt to try, right? He hooked a thumbnail underneath the seam of one of the pyramid's corners. Come on, he thought. The pyramid resisted. It probably hadn't been opened since the Jedi disappeared. The gears or mechanisms holding it all together were probably rusted and stuck. Come on, Din coaxed. He didn't know if he was talking to himself or the holocron, but the low hum in his ears rose in pitch. The holocron in his hand was as warm as skin, as warm as breath. Come on, Din repeated a third time, digging his thumb in, twisting the corner with all his might. Open. The pyramid set into the corner of the holocron gave way. It turned under Din's hand, the edges coming off to sit offset the smooth sides of the cube, and the holocron began to glow. Din nearly dropped it, startled. The hum had reached a deep pitch now, and then the other three corners turned without needing Din to wrestle with them. The holocron sprang apart. This time Din did drop it, cursing, but that didn't seem to matter. The holocron clattered to the floor, but kept glowing. The corners had separated out from the main body, and the whole thing glowed blue and white. The hum crackled and sputtered. And then, while Din watched, a hologram emerged. At first, the projection was badly distorted. Whoever it was talking, but the words were mangled and fuzzy. The image flickered on and off. Learner Ahsoka Tano, the tiny figure said. Din sat down, startled. He peered closer. The little hologram was Tano. Younger, smaller, rendered in shades of wavering blue. But Tano, all the same. She couldn't have been older than 14 or 15. This hologram recording is Linnea. Tano's recording continued. The image sparked and spluttered, the recording fading in and out. Cautious, half convinced that he'd break it, Din reached out and picked up the holocron again, giving it an experimental shake. The image stabilized. As the youngest Padawan in the lineage, I will demonstrate the first form of lightsaber combat, Shicho, the Way of the Sarlacc. She bowed to Din, to whoever's holding the holocron, Din told himself, fascinated, his alarm already failing, and ignited a lightsaber. Even through a recording, her lightsaber hummed and crackled. Tano walked through several easy, basic strikes and blocks, demonstrating each one individually. Din tilted his head. Is this a training tool? Fett had said that the Jedi had used holocrons to store knowledge. Did a holocron do more than just keep information? Were they teaching tools? If they were, they were handy. Tano's recorded frame was small, but clear enough that Din could see her movements clearly and could follow what she was trying to show. It's a lightsaber training holocron, Din realized. This form, Shicho, Tano had called it, was different than the lightsaber strikes Din had picked up spying on Kukruk and the other Jedi. Those forms had been fluid, graceful. This form was almost clumsy. It was so slow and deliberate that Din could see the shape of every move before Tano had finished the form. She didn't fight like this in Caladan. In that forest, Tano had been fast, almost too fast for Din, and had added another lightsaber to the mix. Din wouldn't be able to do half of what he'd seen her do there. But I should be able to pick this up, Din thought. Tano's movements became faster, pace increasing, but nothing she was doing was too complicated or needed the Force, as far as Din could tell. Tano's movements were deliberate but determined. Simple, but sometimes simple was good. Simple saves time, Din remembered, reaching back to his oldest lessons. If you were fighting for your life, it was better to lean on something that was simple but effective than to go for something complicated and flashy. A blaster over a plasma cannon. A punch over a Kashyyyk sleeper hold. While she moved, the hologram Tano offered tidbits of wisdom, pointers for novices. A lot of it was fairly self-explanatory. Never ignite your saber in front of your own face was a piece of advice that Tano gave with a straight face, but Din got the impression that Shicho was the first lightsaber form that any Jedi learned. If a bunch of kids can manage it, I can too, Din reasoned. His fingers itched for the darksaber, eager to try out some of the simple strikes and parries Tano was walking through. But Tano had said that Shicho was only the first form. How many others are there? Din wondered. He set the holocron back on the floor and settled in to find out. After Tano finished her demonstration and bowed to the viewer again, the holocron flickered and Tano's image was replaced by a human man's. The man was very tall and very severe, with a close-cropped hair and neatly trimmed beard. His gaze, even as a holo, was arresting. The recording was older than Tano's, the quality of it wasn't as good, the image was fuzzy and distorted, like it had been copied over many times. "I am Yan Dooku, Master of the Jedi Order," the image declared. "I will be demonstrating Form 2, which its practitioners call Makashi." Without further introduction, the Jedi ignited a lightsaber and snapped it up towards his face, then down at his sides with an almost theatrical flourish. Din startled. The flourish had looked familiar, almost. Jedi Master Dooku launched into his demonstration immediately. Din's eyebrows rose. Dooku's demonstration was much more fluid than Tano's had been, graceful and swooping, almost dance-like. It still wasn't as ridiculously acrobatic as the form Kukurik had been teaching, but it was more of a combat form than Tano's. Din could see which strikes were designed to pass through armor or around another blade, which parries were designed to catch an impact and turn it aside. "It looks like Parkad," Din realized, leaning closer. Dooku's movements weren't exactly the same as the ones Din remembered from his early days in the Fighting Corps. Dooku moved too gracefully to ever be confused for a Mandalorian. Moved liquidly, almost, as if his powers let him ignore the laws of gravity and motion that hindered everyone else. But Dooku's form was close. "Close enough that I should be able to figure this one out, too," Din thought, excitement growing. Dooku lectured through his demonstration, too. Tone as severe and serene as his expression. "Makashi is the duelist's form," Dooku was saying. "Every motion, every action made with the point of countering one's opponent. Makashi is the form of intention." Din couldn't help but follow along. He didn't ignite the darksaber because he was concerned that Dooku's recording was so old the sound of the darksaber would drown it out, but he mimed the motions anyway, closing his hands and practicing angles, positions. Dooku fought mostly one-handed. That would be an adjustment. Din fought two-handed with spears and staves, though he could switch between one or two hands if he needed to. Dooku never switched. He didn't need to. He had such control over his lightsaber that he only ever needed one hand to guide it. When Dooku finished, he bowed to the viewer like Tano had. Or maybe Tano had bowed like Dooku if Dooku's recording was older than hers. And the recording shifted again to another human man. This one wasn't as tall or as severe as Dooku. He had longish hair and a neat beard, and his face was very kind. He reminded Din of Luke Skywalker. Even through an old holo, the man carried a sense of peace with him, draped around him like a Jedi's robes. "Greetings, young one," said the man. Din snorted. The holocron was definitely a training tool for Jedi kids, then. "I am Jedi Knight Obi-Wan Kenobi of the Jedi Temple on Coruscant. My master was Qui-Gon Jinn, whose master was Yan Dooku, whose master was Grandmaster Yoda. I will be demonstrating Form 3. Kenobi bowed and ignited his lightsaber. This holo was of decent quality, somewhere between Tano's recording and Dooku's. Kenobi favored a one-handed grip, too. He brought the hand with the lightsaber in it above his head, blade aimed out at an invisible enemy, and raised his free hand up level with his face. Din cocked his head, trying to understand the position. A defensive form, he realized, watching Kenobi slowly move through a series of high and low blocks. Form 3, which Kenobi hadn't named, wasn't as fluid or graceful as Makashi, wasn't as blocky and deliberate as Tano's form, but it was interesting to watch. Kenobi moved his lightsaber more than the previous two forms had. His blade was always in motion, spinning or twisting or gliding through the air. I want to see this in combat, Din thought. Kenobi moved lightly, easily, bobbing and weaving like a smaller warrior squaring off against a heavy hitter. But does Form 3 work against an opponent? This holocron seemed to just be a record of individual forms, though, not combat demonstrations. Din would just have to watch and learn. Kenobi was a good teacher. He took the time to stop and explain each set of movements that made up a set, a kata, Kenobi called it, speeding up and slowing down to show Form 3 in motion. When he was done, he bowed, closing the lesson, and the image flickered again. If Din hadn't been sitting down already, he would have fallen flat on his ass. Wavering into view, the projection grainy, was Grogu. No, Din thought, leaning so close his eyes crossed and his nose brushed the edge of the image. Not Grogu. The being in the hologram was older than Grogu. He had the same enormous ears, the short stature, the hands that had three clawed fingers, but he looked like he was a little bigger than Grogu, and he had more hair. He was slightly stooped, bent with age. "Greetings, young learner," the creature said. Its voice was creaky, too, but Din felt his eyes growing wet. "Grogu will be able to speak," he thought. "There's others like him out there. He'll grow up and get old and teach Jedi kids." "Yoda, Grandmaster of the Jedi Order, I am," the creature continued. Its pattern of speaking was odd, but intelligible enough. Grandmaster, Din thought. Was that like the allure of the Jedi? Skywalker had told Din the Jedi's ranks. He reached back for them. Initiate, Padawan, Knight, Master, Grandmaster. "A record of my lineage, this holocron is," Yoda said. He carried a heavy-looking stick, which he tapped. There was no ground in the recording, but Din heard the stick anyway. "Long have the Jedi taught the ways of the lightsaber," Yoda continued. "Many apprentices I have had, and many forms they have learned. 7 forms of lightsaber combat there are, and many variations. Shi Cho our foundation, Makashi our duelists learn. Sorosu for resilience and to disarm. Demonstrate the 4th form, Ataru, I will." The old Jedi smiled at Din, ignited a lightsaber, and immediately launched into a series of backflips that had Din staring in open shock. Will the kid be able to do that? Yoda could move. Ataru, Din gathered, was very athletic. He hadn't seen all of the forms yet, he didn't think, but of the ones he had, this came closest to what Kakarot had been teaching. Ataru was dynamic, fast, and overwhelming. Despite the fact that this Yoda probably wasn't any taller than Din's knees and looked old, he was a skilled fighter. He guided Din through several of Ataru's basic strikes and also launched into more complicated maneuvers, none of which Din would be able to do. Ataru, Din gathered, relied on heavy use of the Force. Deciding that he wasn't going to be able to copy the form, Din leaned back on his elbows and just watched Yoda, eager to see what Grogu might become. The galaxy's not going to know what hit it. No matter what Grogu decided to be, a Jedi or a Mandalorian or even a combination of the two, if he grew up to be anything like this Master Yoda, he'd be a force to be reckoned with. Yoda finished his demonstration, and the holo flickered again. Din counted. He was up to 5 forms now. The next Jedi was another human, this one also tall, with shaggy hair and a wicked scar over one eye. This one stood like a warrior. He was laughing, his eyes on something past the holo. "Really, Snips?" the man said. "Just 'cause I made you demonstrate, Shi Cho?" Another voice said something indistinct. The Jedi laughed again. "Fine, fine," he said. "They're pretty similar anyway. Today I'll be demonstrating both variations of Form 5. What? The voice out of view said something that made the Jedi roll his eyes. "All right, Ahsoka, I'll do it right." The laughter faded from the Jedi's mouth. He folded his hands underneath the sleeves of his robe and bowed. "I'm Anakin Skywalker, Jedi Knight," he said. "Master of Ahsoka Tano, who's getting a little too big for her boots. Hey!" Something small went flying past the Jedi's head, which he deflected with a flick of his wrist. Din blinked. This was Anakin Skywalker? He didn't look much like Luke Skywalker, or like the hero Vanth had spoken about. He looked very young, to Din's eyes. Maybe 20. He had all the bluster and swagger of a newly armored warrior of the tribe, strong and eager to prove himself. Former Padawan of Obi-Wan Kenobi, and so on. I don't have to do the whole lineage, do I? No, good. Skywalker took his hands out of his robes and adopted a ready stance. I'll be demonstrating both variants of Form 5, he continued. If Snips has done her assignment right, Ahsoka, if you throw that at me, I'll put you on cleanup duty with Oppo. You've already seen a demonstration of Form 3 from Master Kenobi. Skywalker ignited his lightsaber and gave it a few experimental swings. Form 5 is Form 3's counterpoint, he continued. Where Sorsu is focused on defense and outlasting your opponent, Form 5 is focused on offense. The first variation is called Xian. Skywalker demonstrated several strikes, blocks, and stances. Now that Din actually knew what Sorsu was, he could see what Skywalker was talking about. Kenobi had moved like a Junda bird, dodging and dancing. Skywalker moved like a bladeback or a crate dragon. His strikes were powerful, and he used his height to his advantage. Lightsabers weren't exactly solid, but with the power that Skywalker was putting behind his strikes, he'd still be able to stagger an enemy. Din watched carefully. Some of the athleticism of Form 4 had carried over, and Din could see both a duelist's eye and an attention to defense in Skywalker's movements, but Skywalker was relentless. He switched to the second variant, which he called Jem So, and grinned at Din. Several masters have pointed out that Xian is particularly ineffective against a single opponent, he said. To compensate, Jem So was created. Snips, come here. Ataru, fifth kata. Let's put on a show. Tano came into view, just as young as she'd been in her own demonstration. She must have been an apprentice when this holo had been recorded. Tano took a ready stance, this time igniting two lightsabers, one tucked in a reverse grip. She and Skywalker began to walk through the steps of a mock spar. They went slowly at first, so Skywalker could demonstrate broad, sweeping strikes and neat parries that turned aside Tano's blades, then picked up speed. Din whistled, impressed. They were definitely using the Force. Tano was flipping and bouncing around like Grandmaster Yoda had, and Skywalker was so fast he had to be tapping into some kind of special power. But Din had never seen two Jedi fight each other before. He'd seen Tano make short work of Morgan Elsbeth's guards and Luke Skywalker obliterating the Dark Troopers, but he'd never seen anything like this. When the Mox Bar was finished, both Skywalker and Tano bowed, first to each other and then to Din, and the image flickered again. Six forms? Yet another human man resolved. Like Dooku's recording, this one was older, the quality grainy and blurred. The man was also tall. Din wondered if the Jedi had some trick to growing exceptionally tall humans. Of the four who'd been in the holocron, only Kenobi had been a reasonable height. This Jedi's hair was very long, and he wore a beard and an almost absent expression. He bobbed a shallow bow and introduced himself as Qui-Gon Jinn, Master of the Jedi Order. As there's already a Master of Makashi available in this lineage to demonstrate his talents, Jin began, I will demonstrate Form 6 and what I know of Form 7. None of this lineage have yet declared an interest in Form 7. It's hard, a young voice muttered, somewhere beyond the hollow scope. Jin cracked a smile. But as Form 6 is a collection of all five previous known forms of lightsaber combat, it will give us a solid foundation to cover the basics of Juyo. Form 6 is called Niman. Those among the Order who are less than fond of it sometimes call it the Way of the Rancor, which I believe does the form a disservice. Niman has its foundations in... Din tuned out the Jedi's philosophy lesson and focused on his movements. It looks like Form 4, Din thought. Jin's strikes were athletic and strong, bolstered here and there by what Din could only assume was the Force. Some of the other forms were thrown in, too. The formal grace of Makashi, the twists and turns of Ataru, the raw power of Anakin Skywalker's Form 5. This one will be beyond me, Din thought ruefully, watching as Jin picked up speed, blending individual moves together. From the way Jin spoke, it sounded as if most Jedi didn't like Niman, but Din couldn't imagine why. He thought about trying to fend Jin off, to parry some of those fast, dangerous strikes, and winced. He'd stick with the first few forms. Is there a way to rewind this? Din wanted to see the first few forms demonstrated again. He waited for Jin's demonstration to end. Jin had mentioned a seventh form, but no seventh image flickered. There must not have been a Jedi in the lineage that picked up Form 7. The holocron went dark for a moment, then flickered again. The recording reset to Ahsoka Tano. Din grinned. Perfect. He did climb to his feet this time, reaching for the darksaber. It crackled to life in his hand, and he followed along, doing his best to match his strikes to Tano as she walked through several katas. The darksaber still felt clumsy in Din's hand. The forms recorded on the holocron were Jedi forms, and Din wasn't a Jedi. He wasn't as graceful as any of the Jedi had been, wasn't as used to the shape of the Darksaber in his hand. Practice and repetition were good cures, though. Form 1 was simple enough that Din would be able to memorize most of the movements pretty quickly. He could practice between jobs or in hyperspace. He handled the transition to Form 2 easily enough. It was the closest to the sword forms he remembered from his time in the Fighting Corps. Using the Darksaber one-handed ran against Din's instincts, but new instincts could be trained. Din managed a few of the Kata's Kenobi demonstrated, but the later forms were more difficult. Din resigned himself to memorizing the few strikes and blocks he could do without the Force, and waited for the recording to reset again. That was how Fett found Din sometime later. Din hadn't realized how much time had passed. It wasn't like the Darksaber was heavy. Going at a trainee's pace, Din could practice for hours without feeling the strain. He was so absorbed in his work. He was back in Form 2 again, following Dooku's graceful katas as best he could. When the doors to the lift slid open and Fett walked in, helmet tucked under his arm. Din and Fett both froze. An odd expression flickered across Fett's face, half surprise and half something else. Din felt his shoulders creeping up towards his ears, defensive. He cleared his throat and deactivated the Darksaber. The holocron kept playing. "How?" Fett said slowly, an expression like the black of the sky before a sandstorm crossing his face. "Did you get that open?"